Outkick the coverage live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Friday, you are on the doorstep of your weekend, and we are happy to be your welcome mat. And we will take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific, right here on FSR, and we will do so with the man himself, Brady Quinn.
Some people call this the doormat, right? The doormat of the weekend. Yeah. Others call it the stoop. You know, other people call it the stoop. You're out having a drink or two, getting ready to go out, getting ready to have a nice little Friday, but a lot of stuff going on right now in sports. I know you're not a golf fan, but obviously the U.S. Open's going on. You got to explain the whole marine layer to me or just to people on the East Coast. I'm not sure we really understand how that works and why that would impact golf, but that's always a thing. And then obviously the Bucks coming back and doing what I think we thought they were going to do in Game 5, but now it ends up being a pivotal Game 7. So congrats to Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, who stepped up. He finally showed up to the party, being able to even up that series.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and just say this and get this right off the top, and I don't think this is a hot take. I think this is a fact, and I think this should be implemented immediately. If you were a Milwaukee Bucks fan at that game last night, and you celebrated that team doing what they should have done against a body bag version of the Brooklyn Nets, then you should be arrested and put in jail for 2 weeks and never allowed back at a Bucks game ever again. That was embarrassing. Embarrassing. What are you celebrating? That you beat a C-plus version of this team? You should have done it the game before. Last night should have been the elimination game. You should have taken care of business. You've got all the health on your side. You've got all these advantages. And you got Bucks fans jumping for joy, celebrating like they accomplished something. All you did was what you should have done the previous game. I don't think they should be rewarded, and I think any fan that even so much as clapped their hands together just to get something off because they had a hot dog or a pretzel during the in-between quarters, whoever that fan is, if you clapped, if you celebrated the Bucks at that game, I want you never back in a stadium or arena ever again for the next 12 months. I'll take back the 2 weeks in jail. That seems a bit harsh, a bit much, but I will say never allowed back in a game again. What are you celebrating? Brady, honest to God, did anybody think Brooklyn was going to be able to rattle off two in a row against the Bucks with this version of their team? Come on, man. Like, I don't get it.
Maybe. I was kind of thinking to myself, if James Harden continues to get healthier, maybe there'll be a chance, but I don't get why he played. I don't. Like, I know he scored some more points. He shot a little bit better from the field. He is nowhere close to the version of James Harden that we're accustomed to seeing. And it was very apparent, by the way, that they were one-dimensional. The Nets had to play out of a half-court offense. They couldn't push the basketball. If they wanted to, they were going to be down a man. Like, they knew that James Harden was not going to be able to run the floor. And so it basically allowed the Bucks a chance to, yeah, I missed my shot. I don't need to hustle back. I'm just going to go ahead and wander my way down the court and get set up in our half-court defense, because I know sure as hell James Harden's not pushing it. He can't right now with the way his hamstring is. So, look, I've got all the respect in the world. Anytime you know an athlete is playing injured or he's playing hurt and he's trying to play through it, especially in these circumstances, the reality is, though, that game was probably going to go the way you and I both thought Game 5 was going to go. And as we talked about, it would have made more sense to give him the night off, let him rest, hopefully be closer to what you're thinking is going to be, and 100%, you know, able to move around, take the ball to the bucket. Because right now, all he is a decoy. You know, he's a guy to give the ball to. Maybe he'll take a shot if it's wide open, but he can't create a shot like he used to. He's not going to go to the rim. He's apprehensive about that. He's a liability in defense, and he forces their hand offensively. If you are the Brooklyn Nets, If you're Steve Nash, by the way, a guy who was a two-time MVP as a player who probably capitalized off of transition buckets, fast breaks, dishing the basketball more than any other point guard during his time, especially his MVP years, would you sit there and go, yeah, I get it. He's trying to fight through it, but you're limiting us right now, man. And I'm sorry, but we'd rather go in another direction. We'd rather try to get Jeff Green to step up again, even though shooting 7 from 8 from 3 is tough to do, or Blake Griffin to step up again. I don't think that was the best strategy in Game 6. And now here's the hard part, is they're already handcuffed going into Game 7.
Yeah,
because you know how they're going to operate. You know how this game's going to go. And it comes down to three things, okay? Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and then Drew Holiday have to play the way they did last night. And then they obviously can't allow a performance, a historic performance, by the way, like what we saw from Kevin Durant. So if the betting odds are, I assume, even though they're in Brooklyn, I assume, though, the Bucks will most likely be favored, at least based on how that game looked last night. I have a hard time believing we're going to see Durant do what he did in Game 5 and Game 7. I just do. There's a reason why it's historic.
Yeah, and that's why I look at this situation and I go, I mean, cool. I look, and it's not, and this isn't me saying big picture. By the way, the odds are currently out. This is pretty early on because obviously this game is a day away. It's going to be Saturday night, this game 7, but it's basically around a pick 'em. Depending on where you look right now, you've got some books that have Brooklyn as a 1-point favorite. You've got another book that's got Milwaukee as a 1-point favorite. Right now, it's pick them. I would expect that's going to change. The only thing I actually thought, this best case scenario, and this is going to sound nuts, but best case scenario for Brooklyn was they got blown out early on, and that way those guys could sit the entire second half. I would, if I was Steve Nash, although I shouldn't say this, and although I shouldn't, this isn't what I want to project on my team or to my fans or the league or anything, I would have been better off getting annihilated by halftime and sitting those guys out and only playing them, 20-something minutes the entire, or 20 minutes basically the entire game, and getting them ready with a bunch of rest going into that game 7. Instead, Harden still played 40 minutes, man. And this is, a lot of people don't like James Harden because they think that his style of play is boring because he dribbles, he does the step back and all this stuff. Now that you see what it's like when he's compromised, don't you have a little bit more of an appreciation for how great of a scorer he actually was? Like, he's an all-time scorer. I don't think people actually think about that. He's an all-time scorer. The guy averaged 36 a game for an entire season, and two other guys in the history of the league have done that: Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan. And the conversation around Harden is like, oh yeah, but it's so boring. Now that you see him at way less than 100%, I think there's a new appreciation for not only the grit, as you pointed out, because he's trying to play through this injury, but also the fact that what he does when he's 100% is unlike what we've seen from virtually anybody that's ever played in the NBA.
No, I'm with you. I think you've definitely come to appreciate what his game is when he's 100%. And that's why it's hard to watch what it is now. It's hard to watch it because your expectations are, okay, we're going to see him some sort of element of that. But he's so dependent upon stop, start, and getting guys, just getting that extra step on a guy to get by him, and you're just not going to see it right now. It seems like he's still in pain. He looks uncomfortable. And watching their offense, if the ball's not going to Durant and they're not isolating him to get some sort of mid-range or see if he can get to the bucket, they're struggling to find someone else who can step up and kind of add that other element. And that's where, look, I'm not saying that you shouldn't comprise a team of the big three, but you better have a few guys you feel like can play those role players. I think now more than ever, you start to appreciate some of those other all-time role players for teams that have won championships, right? I mean, and I don't know if it's Ray Allen, for example, with the Heat. He had hit some big-time shots down the stretch there, and maybe he's even too good to be considered a role player. But
Shane Battier.
Shane Battier.
Yeah.
You can go on down the line. I think there's a number of Udonis Haslam was definitely one of those players. I don't know that he always hit a big shot, but he was definitely a guy that was defensively, getting rebounds, that sort of thing. Every team usually has one of those guys. Robert Horry, had made his career off hitting big shots in big moments, but he was never the headline. So this is an example of they don't have that guy right now. You know, Harris has just completely disappeared in the playoffs as far as three-point shooting. You know, Blake Griffin, obviously, it was a great performance in Game 5, but he hasn't been able to replicate that. So it's tough to think that Brooklyn feels any momentum, even though they're coming at, you know, to Game 7 playing at home. All that being said, though, it's tough to bet against KD.
Cool. I mean, people can bet on him all they want. I'm telling you this right now. Like, the story here is Milwaukee's got all the pressure on him. Like, normally it's you go into a Game 7, and the team at home that's got to hold home court, that's the team that put together this big three, has got all the pressure on him. I think all the pressure is on Milwaukee. Brooklyn's got their out. Kyrie Irving's ankle almost fell off his body. James Harden has got a hamstring that looks like beef jerky in the middle of a Tijuana that's been sitting there after a mule came by and did work to it. Like, Kevin Durant, who's trying his all, he played 48 minutes in the previous game. He played another 40 here. Jeff Green was a no-show in this past game. And you bring up Joe Harris. Maybe I'm nuts, all right? But Joe Harris reminds me a lot of Teen Wolf. All right, just something about his mannerisms, something about the way he runs the floor. He reminds me of Teen Wolf if Teen Wolf had shorter hair. You know what I mean? Like, don't you get that impression when you're watching Joe Harris play basketball? That's the impression I get, Brady Quinn.
Teen Wolf. So when you look at Joe Harris, you think Teen Wolf.
Yeah, Teen Wolf. So do a side-by-side. It's literally Michael J. Fox's Teen Wolf and next to Joe Harris. I'm telling you, man, just their mannerisms, the way they run up and down the floor, I'm telling you, Joe Harris looks like Teen Wolf. He's got the headband going. He's got
a little less hairy, but okay. Yeah,
yeah, well, listen. I mean, tomato, tomato. This is the way this goes.
Teen Wolf needs to have some sort of transformation then in Game 7. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, so what you're saying here on the air, so Brady Quinn, who is giving out betting advice here early on the air, you're taking the Brooklyn Nets in Game 7. I want to get this in pen. I want to put pen to paper right now, Brady Quinn. I want to make sure we've got this on the record. Let's go.
I live by, there's a few betting rules out there, okay? Never bet against Nick Saban, never bet against Tom Brady, and then the final one is you never bet against Teen Wolf. So combined with
that's
KD.
Good. So, okay, very good.
Right now, I mean, like, I think this is as good as you're going to get that bet. I guess if you're rooting for the Nets, you might want to wait a few more hours, because I do think there'll be some Bucks fans that come in unless they know what they're dealing with. Unless those Bucks fans are like, yeah, but we've watched this team all year. They could easily just fall apart in Brooklyn in Game 7, and Giannis ends up having a bad shooting night, and the rest is history. But maybe it's not as much about Giannis. Maybe it's just as much about Chris Middleton with the way he's played so far in the series. Maybe it's more about him. But either way, I do wonder what this line's going to do. I would say if you're really that bullish on KD and on the Nets, take it now. But I do think that number might actually end up being a point or two in the favor of the Bucks, just with the way the Nets have looked. I could be wrong, but I wouldn't be shocked if it did end that way.
He's Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. You can hang out with us on the iHeartRadio app, and we will take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific on the Friday edition. You know, it's like we always say, Brady Quinn, it's Quox Sports Radio on Fox Sports Radio. Know what I mean?
That's
Quinn
right.
And Knox?
That's right.
Damn right.
Quinn and Knox, baby. That's what you got to be careful. You got to say that slowly.
You do. Right. You definitely do. All right. Coming up next here, though, there is somebody in the NFL that pissed off a whole lot of people. We will get into that for you next here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
So, Brady Quinn, are you familiar with the Sons in Four guy?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, the guy who went viral.
Yes.
For essentially now, I know the whole backstory. He was a Phoenix Suns fan, however, he was living in Denver at the time.
Yes.
And a couple of guys started to, as the kids would say, flex on him.
Yeah.
By showing off multiple watches on one wrist. I don't know why you need multiple watches on your wrist and some of their gold chains and whatnot. And he had, I guess, got a little mouthy or it said something as they were walking up the aisle. That is my understanding of how this altercation took place.
Yeah, and so he proceeded to beat the hell out of them. And the best part about it was he had like the old hockey move where he pulls the jersey over the head, and it was just uppercut central, and busted these kids up pretty good. And he held up the four fingers, and it went viral and all that. All right, so. Listen, I thought it was a great story. You know, it was funny to watch and all that stuff. And you don't condone violence, but here's what I definitely don't condone. That guy's got an action figure now. The Sons and Four guy has an action figure, all right? Literally, full action figure. Same outfit, the four fingers being held up like he was a member of the Four Horsemen back in the 80s with Ric Flair. You've got the packaging, all of that. This guy gets an action figure, all right? Why can't I get an action figure? Okay, yeah, like you, yeah, like nobody can put one together. Come on, Brady. This
it's a good
is
question.
BS.
It's a good question. I'm trying to really think about why you'd need one or should have one, but I guess I'll start off by saying this: you'd have to have a mic somewhere around you. Like,
yes,
that might be your weapon, if you
agreed,
will, or maybe
agreed,
your ability to defend yourself.
100%
would
agreed
be this mic.
Yes.
And it couldn't be like a headset mic. It would have to be one of those like standard dynamic mics.
Damn
that you
right
think about,
yeah,
when you think about a national radio show host.
You know, the ones that make you sound like this, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, those
one
ones.
Yeah.
And then obviously your facial hair, which is usually pretty well groomed. I mean, there's not too many people who are as meticulous about their facial hair as yours. Here's the problem about you having an action figure, okay? Many people have said, and they've told me this, you look like you could have been in one of the first Supermans as one of the villains.
Thank you.
Again, I forget what planet they're from. I'm not a geek. I'm not into that
yeah
stuff. But you do look like you could have been one of those yeah villains from one of the original Supermans. So you'd have to be a villain. Like, you'd have to be a bad guy, most likely. You've kind of got that bad guy look to you.
Thank you.
You typically wear all black. You typically have what looks like to be a helmet on your head, even though it's really just gelled down hair.
I mean, you know, this is just like, it's like we've got a pinata over my head and all the compliments are just raining down every time you take a swing. This is unbelievable. I mean, it's great that I can feel this good heading into the weekend from my partner here. You know, my sidekick, the guy that I've been doing this with
yeah
for like five,
yeah,
six
man
years now.
It's been great.
I get to be reminded that I look like some Hot Topic knockoff from the Superman movies. And I believe the planet that they come from is Planet Screw You. Is that actually the name of the planet. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Now, let me ask you, okay, did you have an action figure at any point? Did you have a starting lineup figure?
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, there was actually someone actually sent it to me the other day. I forget, they bought it for like $9, and I was like, you just got ripped off by $8.99.
Awesome. Yeah. You don't think that's awesome?
No, I was never into that, never wanted that when I was really a kid or when I got older. That's what makes this weird is at your age, you still want an action figure of yourself. That is just odd to me.
It's not that I want it. It's that I don't want him to have it. That's the problem.
I mean, it
right
looked like he had superpowers when he had the kid bent over and he's got his hand on his back.
Yes.
He'd hit the kid so many times where like he didn't want any more.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not trying to make light of this guy because a lot of people who haven't seen it, they're going to think he's like bullying these two younger kids. The reality is these two kids try to sucker punch him. They actually came and attacked him, and then he slapped them around a little bit to the point where they didn't even want to fight back.
They looked
like they wanted no part of this. I don't know, man. It seems kind of deserving of an action figure.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. After this news, after what I've seen now, that guy getting an action figure, I'm on the side of the other two guys. All right.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on
their
side.
You wear four watches
yeah
now?
Yeah. Damn right. Only at the urinal. All right. We're back next.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, he is always kind enough to join us here on FSR. He is John Paul Morosi, Fox Sports Radio's MLB insider. You see him on the MLB Network. He covers the NHL. And listen, I don't even know if we have time to get into the fact that Italia is rolling at the Euro Cup. JP, what's happening on a Friday?
Oh, Jonas and Brady, my friends. Well, I guess I have to. You've opened the door. You have opened the door, Jonas, for me to speak about this. Io sono molto, molto eccitato per la squadra italiana. Penso che Italia va a vincere la Coppa Europea. I'm feeling very, very confident that Italy's going to win the Euro. I said in advance that I like the way they've been playing with Roberto Mancini as the allenatore, and now that we're seeing some creativity with the goal scoring, Manuel Locatelli, very good game the last time out, and Gianluigi Donnarumma, il portiere più bravissimo del mondo. He's the most, for me, the most impressive goalie in the world, so I'm feeling good, guys. I'm speaking Italian at 7:40 in the morning. I'm feeling real good about this.
I want Italian food so bad.
Yeah,
I want Italian food.
Like, unbelievable.
A nice bottle of Italian wine.
You know what I want?
I want to watch some soccer.
Listen, I want a 32-ounce Peroni at Buca di Beppo right now is what I want. That's what I want from John Paul Morosi. That was impressive.
Guys, no. Listen, I would say this, that when Italy plays again, their third match of the group stage, wherever you are in the world, find the nearest gathering of Italian soccer fans and just go there and enjoy. Find this a beautiful big screen television with some Peroni, as you said, some great food, and just soak it in, because I'm telling you, get on the bandwagon now, my friends, because Italy's going to win. Italy's going to win the whole thing.
That's Brady's in-laws.
Yeah, I was just going to say, JP, I don't have to go very far. I married an Italian woman from Boston, and so when they all come down, it's essentially like a celebration for their Italian heritage every single day. So.
Yeah,
I love hearing that.
Hey, I'm not even Italian. I root for Italy because a dear friend of mine and his father who just recently passed, they are diehard Italian soccer fans, straight from Italy, and they've taught me everything I know about Italian soccer, so I know way too much about it. But the point, you know, all of that being said, JP, your main gig is covering Major League Baseball. We know you're in Montreal covering the NHL and the Stanley Cup playoffs, but it's Major League Baseball. Are we has the dust settled on the sticky substance conversation? I know Tyler Glass now came out this week with some you know, I don't know if accusations are being made, and some guys are getting more and more defensive about it. But where do we stand on this? Has anybody gotten popped, or is anybody about to get popped from your understanding?
Well, really, I would say the true enforcement phase of this is still to come, where I think we'll really start to see the enforcement roll out here in the next couple weeks, and when it does, I do think it's possible that we will see some people getting caught. I really do believe that a lot of pitchers have been adjusting their mentality and their approach, and I think they're really making the effort to pitch without sticky stuff on the mound, but we are seeing the effects of that. We have actually seen in a very short amount of time, even since this became a question and a topic about, enforcement is coming now, and it's been a couple of weeks since we've been talking about this subject, you're seeing the batting average has gone up, interestingly enough. Offense has ticked up. It's not a huge change, but it has happened. And you even heard Garrett Cole. I think it was really interesting, and some of my colleagues in the New York media were asking Garrett some great questions about how he had to change his approach. And Joel Sherman asked him some very good questions about how Garrett Cole, while he was successful, certainly in his last time out against the Blue Jays this week, it was a different kind of pitcher. He was throwing a different mix of pitches because he has to. And I think that we're seeing now that the pitchers who are able to make adjustments and do it, I tip my cap to them for their ability to adapt. But to your point, it also is concerning when Tyler Glasnow, who's someone that I have a lot of respect for, says that he believes that not having that substance or even a little bit of something to help him out is the reason why he's now on the injured list. So I feel for him in that circumstance, and I think it's we are still guys at the outset of just really discerning what the impact of the game is going to be.
Hey, JP, help me understand why Major League Baseball wanted to do this right in the middle of the season. As Tyler Glasnow pointed out, if you do it after the season, or if they've known this has been going on for such a long period of time, why not do it before the season or wait till after to address it and allow these players times to change? Otherwise, maybe the pitchers are more subject to injury, or the batters for that matter, if balls are going to be kind of slipping out of their hands and they're going to see some errant 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. Why did they decide to do it right in the middle of the season?
Well, Brady, that's an excellent question. And I think what I would say on MLB's behalf is that they did circulate some memos as far back as the early part of spring training to let everybody know, hey, we're going to gather data, we're going to gather equipment, baseballs during the course of the first couple months of the season and really ascertain how big this problem is. And so I suppose that was the warning. Now, we could take a step back and say, well, how seriously did the players think that it was actually going to be done, or was this just sort of a memo that went out that like some memos in life are not really paid that close attention to? And I think that in this situation, it was a memo sent with great sincerity that, listen, we're going to monitor the situation. And I do think on some level, Brady, that the results of the games this year, the drop in the contact rate, the drop in or the increase in strikeouts, the drop in the batting average, I think MLB had the cover to say, listen, we sent you guys the memo in spring training, and it's also our obligation to put the best product out there for our fans. And I do think that I think the other most important part here is that it's just enforcing a rule that's always been there. I realize it's been a custom that with a wink and a nod it's been ignored, but I do think MLB is on pretty solid ground here to have some teeth behind this enforcement, and the rollout has been very, very gradual, where pitchers have had a chance to really adjust. But I also think this, and to your point, Brady, this is someone's livelihood. Pitching is their livelihood, and also there are some pitchers who I think mentally have gotten to the spot in recent years where they felt like they had to have this to be able to succeed. And you know better than me as an athlete, just the mentality of the athlete about what goes into your success. You change that formula in the middle of the year, it really, I think, has a chance to change a player's mentality as much as their physicality on the mound.
John Pomerosi joining us here on Outkick, the coverage here on Fox Sports Radio of the MLB Network, NHL Network, and also Fox Sports Radio MLB Insider Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn with you here on FSR. So, JP, last one for me, but I feel like this is sort of an overarching question, and I don't even know if you would have the answer to this. But we've talked a lot about some of the issues that the NFL players have with the NFLPA, that they feel like they're not strong enough, they don't stand their ground. They get worked over in these negotiations. The CBA always seems to be slanted towards the owners. Yet in baseball, the MLBPA is lauded by other athletes, other people that cover sports as, man, say what you want about them, they've got their guys back. When did this, why are they able to put together such strength, and why are they able to put together such a strong union that is respected by so many people, yet other leagues aren't able to do the same thing?
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting topic, and I think we'll see later this year the late Marvin Miller is going into the Hall of Fame because of his impact on the sport, and this goes back to the 70s, and it's a long history of the strength of baseball's union over generations, and I do think that the format of the game has given players a lot of individual standing and opportunity to speak out. It's interesting. Of course, it's a team sport, just like football and basketball and hockey and soccer are in our country, but it probably is the most individual sport of the team sports, if that makes sense, where your own individual performance, there are all these sort of discrete moments in the game. And I do think that that gives players the platform. The union's been very strong, and I do think that there's been a groundswell in a real sense that the players want to have really, really determined advocacy for them in this next upcoming round of CBA talks. So I do think on some level, Jonas, it's all rolled into one, where the on-field rule enforcement is part of the overall context of labor relations, and I think the union and the players are seem to be taking a stronger position in general right now than they have the last time around.
Hey, JP, I've got one more for you.
Sure.
I know you're in Montreal right now, so take us through a day in the life of JP Morosi as you're quarantined, I assume. You have certain protocols you have to go through. So tell us what your daily activities are like right now.
Yeah, Brady, no, it's a great question. It's been a great experience. And first of all, full credit to the NHL and our respective governments in the U.S. and Canada for making it possible for me to be here. So basically, while I was in Vegas and then here in Montreal, the rules are you're at the hotel. There's a designated spot where we can pick up meals. And then there's a bus that takes you to the rink and back. And that's basically your existence. And it's I feel grateful to be here. It is a little different, of course, as we know, different states around the country, and now more broadly, we're getting back to normal, for lack of a better description of it, in daily life. But obviously, when you're at when you're dealing with international travel now, in Canada has if I was not part of this bubble, so to speak, as soon as you come to Canada, it's a 14-day quarantine at home without being able to leave. And so as a condition of being able to leave and cover the games, it's basically hotel only and to the rink and back. So, but the meals have been great. The NHL and the Canadian government have taken great care of us here. So I'm just enjoying. I'm watching a lot of French TV, watching a lot of trying to get better at that. watching a lot of hockey. It's been a lot of fun, guys. It's really been a blessing to be here. Everybody's been so wonderful, and playoff hockey is so special. So the atmosphere in Vegas is incredible. I would say to anybody out there, watch a Golden Knights game in Vegas. It is an experience. They do a great job there. And of course, the Canadiens, just with all the franchise's history here and what it's going to be. Of course, 3,500 fans will be in the building at the Bell Center tonight, which is what
nice.
I've always said is the best atmosphere in sports. So it's just two incredible arenas and franchises and venues. So feel very, very lucky to be here right now, guys.
He is John Paul Morosi, MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports Radio, MLB Insider, and he is a man who is calling his shot. Italia is winning the Euro Cup. It's happening. It's going down, and JP was ahead of this story when it does finally happen. John Paul, we appreciate it, man.
Grazie mille, forza azzurri. And based on what you guys said about Italy before, I think we're all family anyway. I think we're all cousins right now. So
that's
good.
Right. That's right.
Damn right.
Amen.
There it is. All right. There. So the great John Paul Morosi. Now, here's the thing. I would have loved to have spoken Italian, but I only know the bad words.
At least you know some words. I don't know anything. I don't know everything. Usually, as much wine as my in-laws like to drink, given their Italian heritage. When they start speaking Italian, or I'm usually blacked out by that point, or it sounds like they're speaking Italian because I've had so much Italian wine to drink. So
that's good. That's very good. Very appropriate. All right. So you want to go ahead? You and Danny want to have fun at my expense? Go ahead. Read the score. Go do your little crummy recap of this crap.
I do have an official scorecard for that interview with Morosi. Brady got one excellent question, and he got one great question. Jonas, you got a very interesting topic.
Yeah.
So the scorecard results, Brady Quinn 2, Jonas Knox -1.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, man. Like, first of all right, you got to know your strengths and your weaknesses. I have never claimed to be a great interviewer, all right, because I don't have an opportunity to interview a lot of people on weekend overnights. All right,
well, because you don't like to. You don't like to. You like the show all for yourself. So it's a skill that you're still working on.
Look,
I kind of have to check the ego a little bit. That's all I have to do.
I promise you, I've known John Paul Morosi for a long time. I will literally reach out to him and pay him to give me great questions.
I hope you do.
Week.
You've lost 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
I hope you do.
In fact, I will pay him extra to say, you know what, that's a subpar question, Brady Quinn. That way, you should get. If he says you give a bad question, can we at least dock points, Danny? Can we play that game at least?
Yeah,
we already docked you a point. We docked you a point for the interesting topic.
Yeah, the interesting isn't bad. It's just kind of, you know,
he didn't
on
even
the
say
verge.
Question. He just said topic, almost like he skipped over the fact that you asked him a question and just wanted to move on to the topic of discussion. I think it should be deducted a point.
This is just unbelievable. I mean, first off, I can't get a damn action figure, but the guy who beats up a Denver fan at a basketball game in some oversized Steve Nash jersey for the Suns, he gets an action figure. Then Dubs in Nashville, he finds a Chuck E. Cheese action figure. And he's claiming that that's me being sold on eBay right now, and it's not, because if it is, I want the royalties for it. I feel like I'm being attacked at all angles here on this show. It's crazy.
Have we fixed the phone lines in Nashville? Like, where's the update on that?
I have no idea. I think Dub just has pretty much given up on the phone lines in Nashville. Like, Dub, are you over
it? It's 2021,
it?
But whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's Friday. They're not going to fix it today.
like every day. See, but that's protocol in radio. Every day is a 3-day weekend. Every week is a 3-day weekend.
That's right. Everyone's too hungover on Mondays. Fridays, they've already packed it in. It's the Tuesday through Thursday where they're really grinding. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox, Outkick the Coverage here at Fox Sports Radio. Okay. So coming up next, there's a coach who may be hiding something about his quarterback heading into next season. This will be fascinating to watch, and we'll find out who it is together here on FSR.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
It is time for something we do, Brady Quinn. Every single week here on the show, it is a tradition here on Outkick. Are you ready for a little Animal Thunderdome?
Of course, man. I've been waiting for this all week. I tell you that. I get hyped up for this segment. It's a lot of fun.
Well, let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a bone constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
And away we go with Danny G for the latest from around a bizarre world involving animals, humans, and maybe PEDs, depending on where this story goes. Danny, what do we got?
This first story, it got tweeted into us hundreds of times and has caused a stir worldwide. A commercial lobster diver says he was swallowed whole by a whale off of the Massachusetts coast this past Friday, but he made it out alive with only minor injuries following this life and death encounter. Michael Packard, 56, of Wellfleet, was released hours later from a Cape Cod hospital following his scary encounter with a humpback whale. He told WBZ-TV he was 45 deep in the waters off of Provincetown when the attack occurred. He initially thought the whale was a shark, but realized he was wrong when he didn't feel any teeth or pain. Here's what else he told WBZ-TV in an exclusive interview.
My only thought was how to get out of that mouth, and I realized there was no overcoming a beast of that size, that he was going to do with me what he wanted to do, and it was either he spit me out or he swallowed me, and I didn't. And I was actually in his mouth probably a good 30 seconds, but I still had my regulator in my mouth. I was still breathing, and I was just wondering. Actually, one of the things that went through my mind is just, oh my God, what if he does swallow me? And here I am, I'm breathing air, and I'm gonna breathe in this whale's mouth until my air runs out. Crazy stuff.
Sounds like a scene off Boogie Nights.
I mean, look, this is like a biblical story almost, right? Like Jonah and the whale. This is just – and here's the thing is there's been people who have questioned whether or not this story is legitimate.
I'm one of them.
Okay. Well, many around have said, no, that sounds legit. That sounds very legitimate to that area, this sort of thing potentially happening. Look, call me a sucker. I want to believe it. I don't know what I would do. I mean, here's the part of the story he doesn't tell, okay? when he crapped himself, okay? When he crapped himself realizing that he just got swallowed by a whale. That's the part of the story. He's telling you about he's worried about how he's going to get out and everything else. You know why he got out? Because he crapped himself and the whale just smelled it and was like, all right, I'm spitting this thing back out.
That's a good point. No, that's a really good point. Wouldn't you take the War of the Worlds approach? Remember when Tom Cruise got sucked up from you know, one of those aliens on War of the Worlds and he pulled the pins on those grenades and then got out of there and they exploded? Wouldn't you just carry, like, if you're fisherman or, you know, a grenade on you just in case something like this happens?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's right. That's like, why there's that expression. It's like going fishing with dynamite. You know, it's hard not to catch a fish when you go fishing with dynamite. So you carry a stick of dynamite or a grenade for these sorts of circumstances.
Yeah, or at least, I mean, at the very least, like a pair of nunchucks. Like something. Like put up a fight,
for God's sakes. Yeah, those work well underwater.
I'm trying to come up with options here. Danny, are you buying this story? This seems pretty far-fetched, man.
Yeah, you know, you don't know what to think about this. The same TV channel that did this exclusive with them, a day later, they had an expert on debating whether or not this really happened. And they just, it's inconclusive. They don't know. They got to take this guy for his word. But, I mean, I want to believe him. Why would he do this and cry on camera? Like, I mean, I know we've seen people just want attention. But he's just this random diver there in Massachusetts. I don't think he would make something up like that, right?
How did he get out? Did he crawl through a gill? Like, how did he get, I don't understand. Like, how did he get out?
Supposedly the whale opened up and he just... He got out of there. I mean, again, some of us have a theory that he crapped himself and the whale realized that, like, you know, that was what he was going to be feasting on.
Like what? The whale ate it and realized, oh, I don't like this flavor, Jolly Rancher. Let me spit it out. Like, come on, man. Like, this story's garbage.
Like a shark. You know, they bite a human. They realize it's not what they're looking for. They release. They move on. Maybe it was like that. Maybe the whale realized it wasn't what he was looking to eat.
It was kind of like Jiminy Cricket in a Pinocchio, no?
It's just like, Roberto, are you buying this story? Come on, man.
No.
Is Dub there? Dub, are you buying? Like, this story just seems pretty far-fetched, man.
This guy is just higher than a kite. Listen to him. There's no way this is true.
So I'm the only person that wants to believe this guy.
I want to believe him, too, and I kind of like the idea that maybe there's something we're not hearing here, like what you said about the flavor, because Jonas talked about the Jolly Ranchers. How about that blue raspberry that they tried to... Yeah, they, like, use it as filler when they sell you a bag of Jolly Ranchers. We want the cherry and the apple and the watermelon. We don't want your damn blue raspberry.
I agree.
If that whale got a blue raspberry, then I can see how he spit the dude out.
Yeah, listen, I would love to walk up to that guy somewhere while he's crying in front of camera and just say, hey, at the very least, you taste like crap, pal. How's that feel? Going around the rest of your life tasting like crap that a whale wants nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
In my face.
Let me tell you something, though. That audio, if you don't give it context before you play it, it could be interpreted a lot of different ways.
I told you. No, it sounded like a scene on Boogie Nights.
that's one movie. There's probably a whole adult section of movies that could apply
there is.
To.
Yeah, there definitely is.
All right. Let's go from a whale to a bear attack. Which would you rather encounter?
A bear attack.
Okay. Well, these two campers might disagree with you. Let's go to Alaska, to the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. Last Saturday morning, these two campers were attacked by a bear, and it did not end well for them, although they're still alive. So they're sleeping. It's around midnight, and this bear just came out of nowhere, attacks both of them inside their tent, tears the tent up. And after the attack, they're both bleeding, but they managed to kayak to Upper Skelak Lake to seek help at a campground. The campers there assisted the injured pair by contacting Alaska State Troopers via a satellite phone, and emergency medical personnel responded with a helicopter and an ambulance. One camper was airlifted to a nearby hospital while the other was taken by ambulance. They're not releasing how severe the injuries are, but the campers are saying that these guys were badly bleeding. Leah Eskelin, a refuge spokesperson, told ADN that officials didn't know why the bear attacked and didn't know what kind of bear was involved. It was a short, quick, in-your-tent attack, Eskelin told the News Association. We're grateful that they got the care they needed right away and that everyone really came together at that campground to provide them the aid that they needed. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Wildlife biologist Jeff Selinger says that the campers had bear deterrents like a spray and a horn, but they didn't have time to use them because the attack was so quick and intense, happening right around midnight. This guy says there's no indication that they did anything to prompt the attack. Of course, they're sleeping, right? But they're in bear country there. That right. In that part of Alaska, that is where the largest population of bears are. So this guy says you could be in a parking lot at a grocery store in that area. He said you could get attacked in the Fred Meyer parking lot in Alaska. You're always right. In bear country here.
Yeah, well, think about it this way. Okay, just imagine this, picture this, okay? Imagine you look out your back door window and you've got two random people camping in your backyard.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be kind of ticked off? Like, wouldn't you be a little upset if you had two random people that you didn't know camping out in your backyard?
Or a raccoon. Probably,
that's a whole different story. They're not camping out. He just comes in, does his business, and bounces.
We got enough problems with PETA because of this segment. We don't need to be going there. By the way, I've taken, obviously, a bunch of, camping trips and lessons and whatnot. And
I can tell you,
if you want to keep a bear, if you want to keep a bear away from you, just write Super Bowl on the side of your tent. And you can just keep them away from
you.
By the way,
I thought you were going to say just wear that cologne whatever you wore. The last time you
went out, hey, let me tell you something.
People were looking around. Would you wear Stetson? Yeah. I think you were wearing Stetson.
No, Mambo. Oh, it's $12. It's $12 at Ross Dress for Less. Right? It's Mambo.
It might as well be bear spray.
Thank you very much.
No one's coming close to that stuff.
By the way, who uses a tent in Alaska? I thought they all had igloos. Like, am I just naive? I swear to God. I swear to God. Why do people camp in Alaska? It's summertime there.
It's sunny like 24 hours a day right now.
Yeah, but what is it? Like, it's not nice weather out, is it?
Isn't it terrible in the summertime?
Listen, what do I know? Even though we had a gentleman play Headliner Live from Alaska, I assume it's always cold there, and so camping isn't the most ideal thing in Alaska.
All right, let's move on to the next story. The other area where we always have Thunderdome stories from? Australia. If you don't know by now, that's probably half of our stories are Florida, the other half Australia usually. an occasional Alaska story thrown in there. Now, I texted all of you this photo of these spider webs. Insane, right? I mean, blanketing miles and miles of coastline. A town in the Australian state of Victoria has been draped in these blankets of spider webs as millions of spiders have spun their webs to escape flooding, according to Nine News. Miles of roadsides in Bushland and East Gippsland were covered in sheets of spider webs as local spider populations soared very high. They got on top of signs, trees, any tall grass they could find to escape days of intense rainfall. The tactic these spiders use is called ballooning, and they throw out their silk to catch the breeze to become airborne and move between locations. It's like Spidey, but not buildings, trees. What's happened is there's been a massive flooding pretty quickly, so they're using the ballooning not to escape for hundreds of miles, but to almost throw up a lasso on top of the vegetation. It hooks onto the top of the trees because it's lighter than air, and then they quickly climb up, Ken Walker, a senior curator of Melbourne Museum, told The Guardian.
I like spiders. I have no issue with spiders. Anytime there's a spider in the house, I always rescue it and take it outside. I never kill it. I never kill spiders, ever, under no circumstances.
Except a black widow, right?
Well, no. I catch that and put it outside.
Oh, stop.
You've got to squish a black widow. No, I swear to God.
Are you kidding me right now?
Get out of here.
You're lying.
I swear to God.
I'm so full of it.
You can ask my wife. I swear to God. Yeah, I catch it and I put it outside. Every spider doesn't matter.
I would agree with you until you say a black widow.
Yeah.
No,
100%.
Is this like the reality to like Arachnia? Wasn't that a movie?
Arachnophobia.
It's a great movie, man. That was a good movie. But I say all that to say this. I can't stand spiderwebs.
Oh, when you just accidentally, like, walk into one?
Oh, my God. It's the worst thing in the world. Because you can't get it off your body. There's something about it. Like, you feel like you got it off, but you just know it's there. Walking into a spider web is a miserable way to start your day.
What a cast Arachnophobia had, by the way. Jeff Daniels, John
great
Goodman.
Great movie. Yeah. Great movie. Where he kills that last spider with a nail gun. Spoiler alert. That's great. It's great.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, because it is a 1990 film. So
look at this photo I sent you, guy, from East Gippsland.
It's crazy. Sheets. Are you going to tweet that out?
I will tweet this out at Danny G Radio.
That's crazy.
Look, how much money would you need to run through an entire sheet of the webs?
Well, Jonas would be running around trying to save all of them.
Because it's not just the webs there. If you look closely, and you can kind of see it in the video, because this is just a snapshot of the video, there's tons of spiders all throughout the web. You can even see them. So, Jonas, you're not just running through the web. You got these spiders on you, too. How much money if I wanted you to, you know, make a beeline through one of these blankets?
$100 and an action figure. Listen, I drive a hard bargain. $100 and I want an action figure.
You
myself.
Are a cheap.
Listen,
cheap date.
So that is true. I will not deny that. Yeah, listen, that's not the most fun experience in the world. By the way, have you seen those Venezuelan bird eating spiders? Like those things that could pick up a car if they wanted to. Like those things are massive. Those Venezuelan bird eating spiders are from Venezuela, and they literally eat birds. Giant spiders. They're massive.
Oh, you see looking at it now. My God. It looks like a bigger version of a tarantula.
It's crazy. Like, and they literally eat birds. Imagine a bird. You're like, I got wings. What's this guy going to do? And just reaches into the sky, pulls you down, and rips you apart. Yeah.
Brian, how much money for you to run through this thing?
Well, here's what I was thinking. Jonas, leave it to him to reinstall Fear Factor. You guys remember that old show where they would have a
Joe Rogan.
Yeah, they would have guys in like a pit of beetles and stuff like that. I could see Jonas doing that. Although I feel like it would mess up his hair and the little part he has in front. So he might have something about
Of hair gel in there. I'm not sure hurricane force winds would mess up that hair.
God, you're still bitter that I blue drove my hair or whatever I call it. Is
I'm
it blow dry or blue dry?
What was that?
Hey, well, it's past tense. Is it blue dry?
Is it blue your own hair? What?
Yeah, whatever.
Hey, what?
It's past tense. I don't know how to say it in the past tense. Is it blue dry or blow? Whatever it was. But I used a blow dryer on my hair when I was in South Florida, and Brady was blown away that there was no issue whatsoever with the humidity, and you're so jealous. You're still jealous about it because I'm an artist. When
I would be honest with you, I don't recall ever talking about your hair at any point in time ever when you were here for the Super Bowl. I don't remember it being a topic of conversation. We were still trying to decide whether or not we would ever take another commercial airline flight because a pilot convinced us that basically they're all lushes, they all drink, and how many flights he had his entire career flying drunk.
Yeah,
thank God that guy's retired.
Yeah, it was astonishing. A retired pilot telling us about all the flights he was a part of that he was hungover for. It's like, okay, well, that's good. Glad I missed those.
It's like, okay.
So, Danny, you will have that picture of the spider web on at Danny G Radio.
I will tweet that out. And we had one last story from Cocoa Beach. We're running out of time, so I'll save that for next week. If you see any really good Animal Thunderdome stories, you can always tweet those into me at Danny G Radio on Twitter.
All right, good stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.